It's time for Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervie. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan Gervie & Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. And now, here's your host, Alan Gervie.
Good evening, Los Angeles, and everyone listening all over the world on KABC.com. I am Alan Gervie, the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan Gervie & Wynn. And today, as usual, I am here to be the managing partner of your life, and I can't manage your life without my partner in crime here.
Oh, let's not go there yet.
Lauren Savon. Why not yet?
Well, we haven't committed any crime yet, have we?
Well, it's just a saying, Lauren.
Just
come
being
on.
Criminally good on the radio.
It's like Batman and Robin.
I see. Which one am I?
Like Mutt and Jeff. Like Abbott and Costello.
Mm.
Bill and Ted. Excellent. You know, this is kind of a crazy adventure when we talk about Gervie's Law. The last few weeks, we have had a real potpourri of guests.
Absolutely. A cornucopia.
A cornucopia. It's been an excellent adventure.
It's run the gamut.
And today is finally a show that I'm excited about, something that I'm looking forward to.
It's something we all love. Divorce.
That's not what we all love.
Talking about other people's divorces.
And I look at it as a more of a positive thing. You go right to the negative, Lauren. And I'm like, making relationships work. That's what I'm talking about.
No, yes, of course, but it doesn't make good for good TV.
Well, you know,
watching
I'll tell
relationships
you,
work.
We've had so many different guests. You know, we had Paul Anka on a couple of weeks ago, the
incredible
legendary singer.
Yep.
And then Farrah Abraham, the
legendary
reality
teen mom.
Reality star. And then last week, we get the foremost constitutional law expert in the country, Erwin Chemerinsky.
That was like a masterclass in constitutional law. That
was
fascinating.
And talking about vaccine mandates. If you missed that show, check out the podcast at Gervie's Law and learn all about the constitutionality of vaccine mandates. And today, finally, we can get some good advice from someone with half a brain.
I would give her more credit than that.
More than half. I mean, forget Erwin Chemerinsky.
Yeah.
They're both Harvard people. So, you know, we are setting a high standard.
We sure are.
And I'll tell you, you know, when you talk about half a brain, half of it is intelligence. Half of it is just common sense. And then you have the brilliance of Lynn Toler. Mm. And I say brilliance because if you've read her books, and the reviews are amazing of her books. I'm going to read a couple reviews a little bit later. But she wrote My Mother's Rules, A Practical Guide to Becoming an Emotional Genius, Making Marriage Work, New Rules for an Old Institution, Put It in Writing. That's an interesting one. And Dear Sonali, Letters to the Daughter I Never Had, which was her most recent book.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing books, but she is most well known as such a loved, loved judge, arbiter, on divorce court for 14 years. She was someone that everyone turned to with her great sense of humor. She does have the Harvard background. She was a judge for 8 years in the Cleveland Heights Municipal Court and worked as an attorney before that. Amazingly enough, she won her first judicial race by 6 votes at the age of 34.
Wow.
And then she was reelected with 80% of the vote. That tells you she was doing something right. And she served on many boards. She's got a great heart. She received the Humanitarian of the Year Award from the Cleveland Domestic Violence Center. And she has done so much incredible work on TV and through her book writing. She has been seen on WeTV's Marriage Boot Camp, Reality Star. So there's something that Farrah Abraham has in common. And, of course, you know, her work as in civil matters, Erwin Chemerinsky has that in common.
She's also great on Twitter. Do you follow her?
Of course.
Feed? Yeah, she's fantastic
on
Twitter.
So
and
funny.
And she's on one of the newest platforms, Clubhouse, giving talks to women like me.
Women like you.
Yeah.
And, you know, what she's done with girls. And the irony is she has 6 boys. two with her husband, Eric Mumford, and four that he brought into the marriage. And that's a job in and of itself.
Oh, absolutely.
Lynn Toler, how do you do it all? And welcome to Gervie's Law.
I do it all. No one said I did it well.
No.
We are saying that, actually.
Hold on. You can't say that no one said you did it well. My mother's rules. Everyone, I mean literally everyone, should read this book. This should be compulsory read in schools. Too often we are taught academia but not life lessons. This was one of the most life-changing books I have ever read. I can't recommend it enough and enough to everyone, regardless of their age, gender, life situations. Reading this book made me feel as I'm meditating as I was reading, and now I feel so much wiser. There's someone who said you did it really well, and you do it really well. And I got to ask you, Lynn, you know, it's so interesting when you read your books and you get personal, you talk about your background, your father and your mother. Does it bother you when you think your father got ill, never saw the success that you had on divorce court, and you feel like it's so important to make your parents proud? Does it bother you that he never saw that kind of success?
Well, it's interesting. I took the bench 6 months before he died. So when I put that robe on and saw him crying over there, I thought that was the last best gift I could give him. My mother is still mad at me for taking the job on divorce court on television. She said, "We put you through Harvard for this?" And I said, "Yes, you did." And so I'm not quite sure how Daddy would have taken it or not, but I left him with the move that he would really love, because he was a lawyer as well. So I'm happy that I left him with that. And
Lynn, it's so funny when you say that, because it just gave me a vivid memory of my first job as a lawyer. And I remember my boss, he was running around the office screaming, "I went to law school for this. I went to law school and I became a fireman." I corrected him. It's a firefighter. Do you ever feel like you went to law school, put in all that effort, and you became a therapist?
No, that's exactly what happened. But, you know, I hated law school and I hated practicing law. So I used it to its best advantage, because I didn't, you know, I don't like conflict, which is a bizarre thing for a lawyer not to like. And I was a litigator, too, but I'm not big on conflict. Being a judge was nice because I resolved conflict, but I didn't really enjoy being a lawyer. So I was spending a lot of time backing my way out of the profession. So.
That's a great life lesson right there, to figure out a way to turn your skills into something you actually do enjoy.
Exactly.
There's a lot of school involved in becoming a lawyer, and you don't want it to go to
a whole lot of school involved.
You dole out so much great advice, not just on the show, but obviously in your books and on Twitter. And I mean, you've been doing it for so long. It's like, were you always wise, even at a young age, to have all these kind of pearls of wisdom that you're always dropping?
Oh, I was a lunatic when I was a child. An absolute positive lunatic. And I think the process of getting uncrazy, which my mother took on as a job, was such a deep learning experience that I allowed those lessons that I learned from my mother to percolate, because anytime I really ever say anything good, it's a lesson that my mother taught me. She had a particular way of thinking, and it's all based upon emotional intelligence, and I think all of society, and I mean each and every one of us, could use a not just a booster shot, but a whole booster course on how to control how we feel and what we need to do, because we've lost it a bit.
Oh yes.
You know, your mother and father were very different, though. How did you weigh that, and how were you able to kind of get through it? Because what you say about your mother wasn't really true about your father, was it?
No, not at all. I mean, my dad was a brilliant man, but he also was bipolar, and so he could be very, very difficult man. But the beauty of it was, my mother never let us hate him. She kept a lot of stuff close to her vest. Some stuff she couldn't see, she couldn't keep close to her vest. We had to see it. But her thing was, just because he causes difficulty doesn't mean he's a good man, doesn't mean he isn't a good man, and he was a good man.
Yeah.
So she kept showing us the good in him that happened to be sitting next to the crazy in him. And given who he was and when he was born in 1919, a little crazy was a good thing.
Yeah.
I mean, he was so aggressive in war and coming back.
Right.
And building his community, you know, average Joe Blow can't pull that off with a lot of little crazy going on.
We medicate everybody.
Right. So,
you know, you talk about earlier about how to kind of keep your emotions in check. And it's so important. I think now in particular, the country is just so revved up. We're all on high alert at all times. And, you know, tempers are flaring. And, you know, I saw a tweet that you mentioned about not letting anger, you know, take over. Like if a flight attendant upset you because she had no right to ask you to pull your mask up, are you receiving what she said in the same bucket with your fears and frustrations about other things? That was the tweet you wrote that really spoke to me, because a lot of times we take out our own fear on other people, right? It comes out as anger. And that one made me think twice. And I just thought,
yeah, we take it out on the nearest or the easiest
yes.
target. And we oftentimes, when we're faced with fears that we cannot fix, you cannot punch the germ. You cannot alter the election. You cannot do all of these things. So you find, your mind wants to find something that you can control because it's very uncomfortable in that constant state of uncertainty. So what it does is, oh, I can control this. And then you lose control of yourself. And then the next thing you're on the no-fly list.
That's right. What a great note to take a break.
Yeah.
We're going to talk more to Lynn Toler about divorce court, about her books, and about life in general. What a treat. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC. You know, Lynn, I was reading that you have this kind of real intrigue with commencement speaking, and you have some regrets that maybe you didn't go to yours or went there late, but you've got a lot to say, and you don't want to talk about chase your dreams and finding your place in the world kind of commencement speaking, more like how you were on divorce court. You're in their face and giving life lessons, and it's not being sugarcoated, and it's not being in this pretty language that doesn't really ring true in reality. What do you want to say if you're going to say something in a commencement speech?
I always say this. First of all, I think back to what I was thinking when I was 18 or 17 and was going off to college, and all the stuff that was in my head and all the mistakes that I've made. I've made so many of them. And the practical advice is the one that I hang on to. I want a to-do list. I want some plans. I don't want to tell you chase your dreams. Everybody says chase your dreams. You can get that anywhere. But they need to know that you're going to do some foolish stuff. Please do not post that online. You know, they need to know. And all the teachers applauded when I said that one, because you get caught up in this river of culture that requires you to post everything that you do, and then you find yourself caught up in that, and it won't serve you well in the future. I tell all of them to, you know, you're going to make mistakes. Own the mistakes you make. Take responsibility. Don't, you know, all of those little things that go to class. I did not go to class. I think that's that's one of the biggest regrets that I've ever had.
You didn't go to class.
Either in law school or undergrad. I just didn't go.
Wow. How do you get to Harvard and not go to class?
Isn't that the most ridiculous? I had to apologize to my parents because they paid for it.
I mean,
what I would do is I would go to the first day. I would buy the books. I would get the syllabus. And then I would go at the class where they talk about what's going to be on the exam, and then I would take the exam.
Oh, so you were strategic about it. Okay.
I was very strategic about it, but I was lazy, and it was ridiculous. And if I could do anything, the biggest regret I have is not going to class, because think of all that stuff I didn't learn. Oh, my God.
If it makes sometimes you feel any better, I went to class all the time. I couldn't tell you about 75% of what I learned in college, so.
You know, a lot of things, though, that we really hang on to are not necessarily things we learn in class, but they're things that are life lessons. And that's something when it comes to divorce court, that was something that you really shone with, being able to cut through the BS, so to speak, and get to the heart of matters. It's a little unorthodox, but I think people really love to see how you took these couples and you were able to really get to the bottom line. You know, it's funny because I remember one just stands out, and I don't know why, but it was a couple. And the husband was the greatest guy in the world. He did so much for his wife. I think their names were the Lucases. And they talked about, she said, oh, he says I love you all the time. He's making food for me. And then she blamed him for everything, saying, I got heavy. I got fat because he was such a good cook. I couldn't stand how he was doting on me all the time. Isn't that what women really like? And why were they in front of you on divorce court?
Because she didn't have any sense. Some people, you know, some people don't know how to take it. So I said to one couple once, and I remember the Lucases actually, because he was sight impaired,
yeah.
And he had on glasses. I remember them like it was yesterday. But I told this to one young guy. I said, "Nice guys finish last because women are silly." You know,
yeah.
you talk about, you know, he's got to be 6 foot and a soldier and all this kind of stuff. Most people in divorce court or anywhere don't really know how they got there.
Mm.
And they understand their position. They are very convinced of their position, but they really don't know how they got there or what is doing for them in the long term. So my job is to assess what's happening over there and put a mirror up to their behavior so they can see what they're doing and why it's not serving them.
What is the number one reason people find themselves in divorce court? I mean, would you say it's financial? Would you say it's emotional?
Financial is what people cop to, and I think it's an underlying stressor that when it's really extreme, it weighs heavily on a marriage. These days, there's been more and more of the infidelity of the type that you don't have to leave the house to cheat because it's right there on your computer.
Social media.
So the availability of that has become a real problem. So there are a lot of reasons why people, but there's no one major one, but finances and cheating, they're right up there.
You know, here's a big problem, and you said something very important. You put a mirror in front of them. You want them to see themselves, and that's such an important concept. However, what about those people who, even when you put the mirror in front of them, they can't see who they are? They can't see what they're doing. They can't see it at all. They don't want to be open to it. How do you handle those people? Because there's so much that, you know, you talk about when you say things like, you can't stand the phrase, I can't. These people.
No, I can't stand the phrase, I can't. Because people say it all, but they say it too frequently and far too often, and it's not necessarily true. And my mother would never allow me to say I can't, because once you do, the thing about which you say I can't is now foreclosed to you. Your mind is in a box, and you have decided that you can't, so you will not try. You will not look at different ways and different methods. Everybody keeps solving the problem in the same, attempting to solve a problem in the same manner that they have because it makes sense to them. But my thing is, if you haven't solved the problem, I don't care how much sense your response makes, it's not useful. Let's do something else. And people aren't very good at change, and they're not very good at changing their line of reasoning, and they're also emotionally attached to what they've done. So
exactly.
they have to explain it, and they have to own it, and they can't say, man, I screwed up. The best thing my mother ever gave me was the ability to own my mistake.
Mm.
And if you can't own your mistakes, you are condemned to repeat them, you know, ad infinitum. And it's just.
But how do you get people to understand that concept? It makes so much sense, Lynn, when you talk about it now, that you have some introspection and you think about things and you say, yes, I made a mistake, or this is not the way to handle things. It hasn't worked in the past. It's not working now. But if people aren't willing to see it, how do you show them that mirror and make them see it?
Sometimes I use my own errors. I've done, you know, at 62, you've done about every wrong thing there is at least once, if not twice. So sometimes people aren't able to accept their own error, but they are able to accept it in other people. So if someone in authority is willing to say, I know what you did. I did the same thing. And let me tell you what happened, why it happened, why I was wrong, and what happened when I tried, when I decided to change. Or you can use it with humor. People are more likely to allow you to redirect them if it's humorous and not seen as a loss. Or sometimes they don't get it in the moment, but they get when they get home, they get it because it's so difficult.
Right.
You're so busy defending yourself that you have to give room for people not to look foolish in public.
Mm.
And so sometimes they get home and think about it.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Why is I was going to ask because I'm thinking about this and you talk about anxiety. A lot of this leads to people who either have pre-existing anxiety or they get anxious. Why is that a lie? And how do you deal with people who are stuck with their own anxiety?
Well, I tell them about mine because I have a lot of anxiety, and I also tell them practical things by which to approach your anxiety. People say, well, I'm anxious, and there's nothing I can do about it. Yes, there are things that you can do about it. There are ways to manage it. There are processes and procedures that you can put in place to help, take the edge off of that. And I tell people what I've done in that arena and then allow them to figure out their own stuff along the way. But people tend not to... Oh, that's just me, or this is who I am. Because that stops you in your tracks. It's like, this is who I want to be. How do I get there? That's the questions I want you to ask.
It's so interesting, and I wonder if you saw this maybe with your sons, but this younger generation, a lot of it is like, well, this is my truth, and this is who I am, and you need to accept me as I am no matter what. And I came from a different generation, I guess, where it was like, if this is bothering people, like, I need to figure out a way to make it work. I need to change something to make it better. I feel like there's a sense now that, if you ask anyone to change their behavior or, do something a little differently, you're denying them their truth.
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you're saying. We're all going to be living in silos of our own solipsism.
Yeah.
Because we're just not allowing somebody else to say, if you upset me, that doesn't mean you were wrong. But in this generation, they say, if you upset me, you are wrong in
right.
some way, shape, or form.
Right.
I don't want to take away triggers from my children. I want them
you need to be triggered.
Bulletproof back.
Yeah.
Because the world does not care about you, and it's not its job to care about you. We should care for each other as best we can, but if you send your children out with the sense that all things that are not right down the middle for you are offensive or making you change, it is a recipe for angst and anxiety that you will never be able to resolve, because we all have to live together unless we're going to get in our own silos. And then what happens to society?
So
right.
True.
We just fight all the time.
Exactly. And we need to avoid that. I'm starting to relax right now. I'm looking forward to the next two segments with Lynn Toler
Lynn Toler, she's human Xanax for everybody.
Gervie's Law. On KBC 790. Stay tuned. Here's a review from Making Marriage Work, New Rules for an Old Institution. This book on marriage is both definitive and exhaustive in scope. A must read for any and all couples, young and old. Nothing is left to chance, from communication strategies to the correct questions to ask for positive results. It's really important to think about positive results. And then the next reviewer said, Judge Lynn Toler is my new heroine.
Oh.
Well, she's been a heroine for many people for a long time. So this person just discovered her.
Not the drug, obviously.
No. I love her clarity. Well, you called her a drug. Now, not heroin.
Different kind. Yeah,
okay.
No, helpful.
We're talking
helpful.
About drugs here with Lynn Toler. I love her clarity, insight, and humor. I'm sending her two books to my family and friends. Love her on divorce court. She's so helpful while honest. If she ran for the U.S. president, I'd caucus for her campaign.
Wow.
You got to vote for
president.
I never
heard that before. That was wonderful.
There you go, Lynn.
Any political aspirations?
Not a one. Not a one.
Good answer.
I'm sorry to hear that, though. No. We could use a lot of more Lynn Tollers in government.
A little common sense.
People with a little common sense.
There we go.
Really, really could. Just a rational adults who will not hoop and holler and scream, and that we get that they are not so dedicated to the proposition of their own career that they can't get in a room with somebody on the opposite side of the aisle out of it, but public say, hey, let's fix this. And they used to do that. They don't anymore. And I think that is, it's a recipe for disaster.
Well, the country's suffering. Together. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it gets us nowhere.
Mm-hmm. Why don't
it gets us absolutely nowhere.
Why don't people have more to do with their lives than spend it on social media and saying things, doing things that are what I think you would call stupid? You know, you talk about downtime being the devil. What did you do to make sure that you were not sitting around thinking and causing havoc in your own mind? I read about building dollhouses, teaching yourself to paint and draw, taking piano lessons, ice skating lessons. That's incredible. That's living. That's not just talking about life.
Yeah. Oh, during the pandemic, I took up crocheting. I got
Were you baking sourdough?
An indoor garden. I am scared to death of having no time, having a time where my mind is not actively engaged. You can read book. Kindle has changed my life because every time you read a book, there's like it references three other books that you want to read as well. So you can just keep downloading and downloading and downloading. But we are so easily entertained, and we would rather soak up everybody. You know, social media is an emotional accelerator. Everyone gets into their feelings and into their, you know, and then their angst and their upset. And so in order for yours to go viral, you have to have more angst and more upset and more rhetoric.
Yes.
And more superlatives. And it ratchets it up every emotional level. And it's something that we have to actively and specifically address. Like, I tell people to watch your algorithm. I mean, I have changed I specifically put a lot of happy babies, kittens, and dogs in my algorithm so I don't get obsessed by the problems that I see. Because I have certain political leanings, I have certain, intellectual things that I go by. And if you just deal with that alone, you lose you can lose your joy.
So you don't have a worry book?
I used to, don't have any more. I used to have it when I was really under the weather with that anxiety thing. I had a worry book where I had to write down everything that I was worried about. And then, like, weeks later, I'd have to go back and write down what actually happened, and compare it to what I've already written.
And that's the book of stupid.
The book of stupid. I mean, that's exactly what now we've seen I think the Wall Street Journal just came out with that story about Facebook and how, but humans are programmed to respond emotionally to those types of, tweets and posts, and it just gets so ratcheted up. You don't, you lose sense of reality, really, because you would never speak to people like that in person.
And you can also, when we get into a crowd, crowds are naturally stupid creations. Everybody in a crowd can be. I remember Gustave Le Bon's book, the Psychology of Crowds, and people get dumber and dumber in crowds because you're surrounded with like-minded people, and you can say all these outrageous things. You're not going to be held accountable to them because you're part of a crowd, and then you catch that crowd's feelings, and you exacerbate and accelerate how you feel. And now we have crowds online of like-minded people all over the world with the same book of crazy, and they get involved and they get reinforced, and that's how we get all of this extreme behavior, because people are living in their silos of their own belief systems in a manner that it precludes learning. You can't learn anymore. You got to get canceled. Either you believe as I believe, at the way I believe it, you have to have the same amount of distress over the things that I'm upset about, or else you're A, and since you're A, and then they put a label on you, I can't deal with you, away with you. And that's the opposite of what we need to be doing.
Specifically, you did divorce court. What is it, 13 or 14 years?
13 years, yeah.
We haven't asked you why you're not doing it anymore, and we can save that. It's up to you whether you want to talk about it or not. I know there was a little bit of...
mystery.
No, it wasn't mystery. She just had a different direction she wanted the show to go in. But if you want, we can ask you. But before I do, something more important, because something that you learned over the 13 years, tell us specifically with couples why... it's so hard, just an easy question here, why it's so hard to be on the same page. Are expectations just too high for couples? And doesn't there have to be some reality of it almost being a business instead of just love?
Absolutely. People fall in love, and if he's a soulmate, it should work out, you know. And you don't sit down and think about it. You don't sit down and think about how it alters your existence. And when you marry somebody, it changes what, you know, where you sleep, how you sleep, what you're going to do, who's going to pay money. And the smartest thing my husband and I did 34 years ago was go to a marriage counselor before we got married. So we knew what kind of weird each of us was sporting. We knew where it was, what it was, and we went back to marriage counselor in year 7 and year 18. When things got rough, we run to a marriage counselor, and most people wait until it's the end of the relationship as opposed to, we need a breather. So people, they make assumptions about how the other person feels. They bring their old experiences into it, and then they assess that other person's behavior based upon what other people used to do, and they don't sit down and have a conversation about all the things that you need to have conversations about. So you end up getting irritated and then speak only when you're upset, and then that, you know, you don't resolve anything.
Okay, Lynn,
another problem.
Your Honor, I need to cross-examine you here for a second.
All righty.
I know you're not afraid of that. Before... you were talking about how important it is to get rid of the worry book and the anxiety, and you talked about, you know, building dollhouses and doing, keeping yourself busy. What if you're in a marriage and one person just wants to live life, just wants to get on with life, enjoy everything, and doesn't want to get caught up in all of this? Now, I know therapy is important. You're talking about it now and that it was successful for you and your husband at different times in your marriage, but where do you draw the line between focusing everything on the marriage and not just getting on with life and taking care of the kids and moving forward with work and things that need to be done?
I mean, it's all about checking your program on the regular. You can get stuck in the darkness of day-to-day activities and not lift your head up and think, huh, are we going where we originally intended? Have things changed? Has he changed? Has I changed? So you have to be able to step back from your marriage every once in a while and take a look at where it's going and what's happening, because it doesn't take care of itself. You have to actively, marriage is a process. It's a process of growth. We are two entirely different people now, 34 years in, than we were, you know, in the beginning. And you have to actively manage and navigate those changes.
How much time do you spend? If you have kids and you have a busy life, how much time do you spend on that?
It's so easy if you do it. You do it regularly. 10 minutes. 10 minutes. Couple times a week, you check in, you check up, what's happening, what's going on, or we need, you know, is everybody happy, how's everybody feeling, where are we going, is this what we intended to do? It doesn't take that long if you constantly do it.
I am not married, but I, you know, I've been in relationships, I know how difficult it can be, and to really work things out and talk to the other person, and I wonder from... you know, the advice that you give other people, how you take yourself out of the equation. And what I'm asking, I guess, basically is, you know, I've been myself. I'm so independent. I've never been married. I've never had to answer to anyone else. And how do you kind of deal with a unit instead of just yourself?
I mean, it's difficult. I mean, I married a guy with 4 kids, and I've always been a loner, and I didn't give up my apartment when we first got married.
So that would be me.
Tell him, nice, I would go back to the apartment and get my mail.
Yeah.
And then he said, around 10 o'clock, I'd get a call. babe, I think I'm going to stay over here tonight. And he goes, Leslie, I got to get her to change her mailbox so I can get her in the house. And it was, you know, it took me a while to be able to do that. And when we bought our first house, I had to have my own room.
Yeah.
Because I had to have a room away from him and the kids. And he didn't really understand it, but he loved me enough, like, okay, if you need to have your own bedroom, that's fine. I always stayed in his bedroom, but there were certain parts, there was a room that nobody could go in but
sure.
me, where I had my comms. So you have to actively decide to deal with whatever kind of weird you're sporting. And we all knew I was sporting that kind of weird.
We all support weird. Maybe I can get my wife on the line after the break.
That would be helpful.
And
yeah.
We can do a real live session with the judge and talk about what weird we're all supporting. We're talking to Lynn Toler. And you got to get her books. Go to Amazon, get the books. This is Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC. Real quickly, Lynn, and I don't want to spend too much time. Do you regret leaving the show? And what was the basic reason? And let me make this a compound question. What do you see moving forward after leaving divorce court?
I don't regret leaving the show. The end started 2 years before when they moved to Atlanta and put me what I call the spaceship. I wasn't fond of the scenery change, and then we got a new EP, lovely woman, but she wanted nothing but loud and crazy,
right.
And we fought all the time. And I used to love coming to work, and that last year I hated it. And I couldn't control. It was becoming, more and more. I mean, it never was Masterpiece Theater. I get that. But it was becoming more and more Jerry Springer-ish because that's what she wanted.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't. I couldn't.
That's not you. That is not you. I mean,
when
you were talking, you were serious. You were trying to help people. You weren't just trying to sensationalize things.
Nope. I meant it. I meant everything I said, and I worked really hard to say the right things. And to turn it into a joke, I was embarrassed by it.
I really take my hat off for that because, those of us who practice law, that's why we are doing it. And I really feel for my clients, and that's what you were doing. If someone tried to make it into a circus, I'd be out of there too. Before we bring Nancy, my wife, on, because she probably has some important questions to talk about me, but where do you see yourself going? Because I really want to get into this now. You're young. You've got so much experience. And with all the writing, you did a great book for daughters. You don't have a daughter, but it's a book. Here's a quick review of it. Common sense advice for all ages. Easy to read. Gives clear, practical advice. This was an amazing book. Are you going to keep writing, or what are you going to do?
I am keep writing. I'm writing a book right now, dealing with what we were just talking about, our emotional solipsism that I find so distressing these days. So I'm doing that, and then I have like three or four shows in the works. One marriage boot camp that's going to be airing next in October, and then I have two other shows that I'm working on. Knock on wood, one of them will see the light of day. So
wow, that's
working.
Well, we're going to have you come back on when the new book comes out, the marriage boot camp. Always great advice, Nancy. Welcome to Gervie's Law, or should I say divorce court?
Hello, Nancy. How are you?
Hi. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Yes, I was looking at your book, and I love some of the things you talk about, especially when you say how you talk about being consciously married. I love that idea that we're present in the marriage and we're working on it and talking about the relationship and spending time together. You know, Alan and I both have really busy lives. Kids, Alan's really busy working, and I think we have a hard time being consciously married and making time for the relationship. And I love what you just said about, just taking even 10 minutes a day to check in. I guess my question for you is, you know, how, you know, I think when we try to do a 10-minute check-in, it's not ever a 10-minute check-in. It's usually like an hour check-in because we end up talking about so much. But I guess, you know, how do you make that a priority when you're so busy? I mean, you know, what can you do to, when you are together and talking about the relationship, having it be positive and not negative?
And we only have two kids. You raised six boys.
Right, right. I think it's the way you think about things. If your kidneys failed, you would make 6 hours a week to go to dialysis. You would make time to go to chemo. So I made time to make the marriage work. And if you check in frequently, the check-ins don't tend to be as long as you go along.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. You hear that, Alan?
It's one of the most
important
things.
Yeah, are you listening, Alan?
I'm listening. But you know, doing little things, Nancy and I try and do little things for each other to make us feel better because we're busy and everything. Isn't it important, though, that we appreciate what the other person does for us, even if it's a small thing? Lynn, I don't think people focus on the positive enough. They want to talk about the negative and not the positive.
Right, you can always tell when my husband and I aren't getting along. We're extraordinarily polite and we're very, very complimentary because we know things are rough. Mm-hmm. So a little, you know, you usually don't save your best behavior at home. It's usually at home with the work, but we bring our best behavior home. And we work at it that way because he's the most important person in my life. But he's typically they're the last person that you will say a kindness to because you're home, they're there, da 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 da. But we work we even say things really. You know what, baby? He said this to me the other day. He said, you know, 10 years ago, you'd have lost your mind doing that, but you've evolved.
Oh,
wow! Can couples? I think the individuals in the couple, can they evolve? Because a lot of times, you know, when Nancy and I talk, you know, we kind of both harp on each other's, you know, well, you're this kind of person, I'm this kind of person. Obviously, you know, I'm really into sports and taking our kids. Our kids are 7 and 8 years old. I coach both of their baseball and softball teams. And Nancy didn't grow up that way, but she's, you know, she's starting to get into it. She loves going to the games now. Is there a way to evolve emotionally as well as just with interests in the marriage?
Oh, absolutely. And that's by having conversations and, you know, stealing behaviors from one another. Like, he does so many things. He's calmer than I am, and he's this and that. And I always say, and I always preface when I'm going to say, you know, I'm about to tell you something that you're going to think is crazy. He goes, okay, give it to me. You know, so it's just we're very cognizant of what we're saying, why we're saying it, and what we're trying to do.
But do you appreciate that in each other? Like, how do you come out and focus on the positive versus, you know...
Versus, oh, I hate when he does that.
Yeah, I hate when he does that. Or, why do you do that? Or, you know, again, you didn't do this. How do you focus on that positive?
Sometimes you can do it really simply. Say, I gotta do two a day. Just say, tell yourself, I'm going to do two things, and I'm going to thank him or compliment him about two things.
All right, that's great advice.
Yeah, that is
make
good
a decision.
Advice.
No, I like make a decision, you know, and you know, you make a decision about other. You're going to read another chapter of this book you're trying to learn, or you're going to, oh, I got to do one more problem. Why don't you do that kind of thing for marriage too?
Because exactly. That's great advice. Nancy, I want to say that, you know, you take such great care of the kids. It's amazing how great you take the kids, and you're so beautiful. And one more. Lynn,
Thank you.
You have a wonderful radio voice, Nancy.
No, that's Lynn.
Thank you. Do I get this again later today?
Yeah, it's twice a day. We're doing
two a day.
Okay, I love it.
Lynn, you got to write another book on this. This is what we need. Please.
All right. Sounds like a plan. We'll
do. Please give it. I want to thank Lynn Toler for Divorce Court and all the books. Go to Amazon. Look up her books. They're amazing. We're going to wait and find out what other books are coming out and her TV shows and the marriage boot camp, all of this stuff. It's been such a pleasure listening to you. I've learned a lot, and Lauren is looking at me like she doesn't need any drugs now because she had her emotional drug.
That's right. It's my, yeah, I don't need to go to therapy later today.
There you go.
I feel centered.
Thank you. Thank
you
so much for
it.
You know, listen, Lynn,
I just
want to say one thing. Even if the divorce court people didn't say it, I'm going to say it. Thank you for all you do for everyone and how you think of others first and make their lives better. Not as a joke, but as a beautiful heart. Thank you, Lynn Toler.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
All right, and that's going to do it for another episode of Gervie's Law. We will see you next week. Thanks for listening.